This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
No weapon formed against me shall ever, ever prosper.
When you're on my right off, I'm a best mash up. In Almighty God, when me put me trust, none of them can stop me, me put God first. No good man can get rid of us.
You and your Obia man, you and your Obia man, no one can help you.
No, stand by bada badeng.
You and your God.
You and your Obia man, you gotta call on Jesus. Today, we're talking about African spirituality, right? I bring in a Pan-Africanist, right? I brought in a person who's responsible for culture, proponent of African culture, right? And I'm saying that a couple of y'all practices, I think, is Obia. And if it ain't Obia, and he ain't all of Jesus, I might have a problem with that. Today, actually, I brought in Christopher Davis, historian, who, and I always have to ask you where you work now, even though I know where you work, but for the benefit of persons who are listening audience, to give credence on your specialty and what you do, can you kindly repeat that? And then we can start our conversation on what is Obia and why is it still in the books that is against the law? You know, in the Bahamas, despite our constitution said we have freedom of religion, you can be Hindu, you can be Buddhist, but you can't practice Obia in the Bahamas. That's against the law, despite what the Constitution say. So you're free to practice whatever you want. But we speak in African spirituality today. I have found out through research, we have scores, if not hundreds, of Bahamians who are practicing, who have embraced African spirituality. Your people in the banks, doctors, lawyers, who have, is it safe to say renounce Christianity, but have sought out a higher power, have returned to origin because God has touched them and said, hey, there is nothing sinister about being African, despite what they told you before. So that's what we're going to have a conversation about. Before that, and before I have Christopher Davis introduce himself and tell you where he's coming from, I want to read this live read, right? So NASA Cruise Port presents Phil Stubbs live at the Amphitheater on Saturday, this Saturday, January 13th. I always say 13th wrong, right? Join Phil Stubbs and Nishi LS and Iris Thor and the Spank Band for an amazing night of pure Bahamian music, sponsored by Kalik and Ron Ricardo. General admissions is $50. VIP is $75. Sky pods are also available. Get your tickets now at BahamasEtickets.com. That's Phil Stubbs and Friends live at Nassau Cruise Port on Saturday. That's this Saturday, January 13th. Don't miss it. And it starts at, what time does it start at? 7 o'clock? 7 o'clock.
Doors open 7 p.m. Showtime 9 p.m.
Okay, let's start our conversation now. Christopher Davis, who are you?
I work at Clifton Heritage Park. It's a long drive for most of us Bahamians, but it's actually not that far away. I'm the head of research and also dealing with the tour section. And essentially, I'm spearheading a massive project where we seek to turn Clifton Heritage Park, or a section of it, I should say, into a very big sort of outdoor walking museum experience with some very profound history, particularly focusing on history, or let's say our story, as you like to use that analogy all the time, not focusing on his story, but now more so focusing on our story, and of course, throwing some shade on William Wiley and the Loyalists.
And when you say our story, you mean African story?
Of course, we mean...
And when you say African story, bringing back this our topic, the African spirituality...
Well, that is definitely going to be one of the features out there at Clifton Heritage Park.
You're going to have an Obia spot?
Oh, yeah. We can have a spot focus especially on that. I don't want to say too much about it until it comes out officially with Clifton, but we can talk about some of those aspects, and that's, of course, why I'm here this morning.
Okay.
So thank you for having me.
So what is Obia?
So Obia, I would say, can be defined in two ways, and this is one of those... complex words, if you will, that we have to look at from two angles. So one is the angle, the colonial angle, or the Eurocentric angle, even if you will. And if you look at some of the earliest recordings of Obia in the Caribbean, you actually notice that some of them spell it O-B-E-R, right? Now, there's another theory. So unlike other African spiritualities, where a specific word you could trace directly back to Africa, so like voodoo comes from Vodum, which is from Togo and Benin, you understand? And Paulo Mayombe comes from the Congo, you understand? So these are well-known African religions that are practiced in other countries where it's not considered illegal. And ironically, this is done more by indigenous Americans than it is Africans in the Western Hemisphere. So Obia, in essence, from the colonial Eurocentric point of view, was pretty much any African practice that was misunderstood or deemed evil. And this went in tandem with the demonization of African tradition, African custom, and even existing as an African, essentially being something that was not only wrong or immoral, but they also portrayed it as something that was even evil and anti-Christian, if you will.
So you're trying to say Obia is magic?
Depends on how you look at it, but from their perspective, it was magic, it was all of that. So just to put it in perspective, you have to understand the level of hatred towards Africans and, to use a modern term, racism that existed at that time, right? And so someone could come in there and see Grammy cooking sour sea. All they seen is a bunch of leaves in a pot. She cooking bush medicine for the community, and they would say that, oh, well, she conjuring up these things. And
she's trying to say bush medicine was classed as Obi at one point in time?
Certainly. And when you look at the way the law is written, as a matter of fact, a part of the Obi Act, as you alluded to earlier, it actually says at the end, even for restoring a person to health. So all the aloe, all the obia, all the take this plant and drink this for that and take that one and rub that on this to make the sore go away and all these different remedies that we have, all of that was actually also considered obia, voodoo, African witchcraft, and evil. And these are things, of course, that we hold great pride in the Bahamas today.
At one point in time, early 1900s, they made Obia against the law, right? One of the concerns was that a number of, due to protests, a number of Africans were poisoning their slave masters. Then, also, there were a number of Anglo and Black people who sought medical assistance from Africans.
Certainly.
So they made it against the law, so you can't practice that. You're no doctor. You're practicing Obia if you give him Circe. You're practicing Obia if you give him aloe.
Certainly.
If you're practicing Obia if you mix that nut egg and whatever it is.
Right. And if you actually think about it, Western medicine, relative to African medicine, even up until the 1800s, I would say, was relatively primitive in certain sections, right? So, for example, just to segue away from the Bahamas, but of course something that's related to the entire world, is an enslaved man named Onesimus, who actually came from present-day Ghana. And he was enslaved by a man named Cotton Mather. And so anyone who's following, they could actually Google the name Cotton Mather. And you will see that he is a man who was touted as like the father of inoculation, the father of vaccination, even if you will. And most medical doctors, people studying, they would learn about this man as this hero. But it was his and a man that he had enslaved from Gold Coast, Onesimus, who had given him the remedy and discovering this inoculation and also the discovery by Western medicine that we had something called an immune system. And what he did was he told his enslaver, Cotton Mather, to when the scab of the smallpox scabs over, you take a thorn or a needle and you stick that, and then you slice the person. They could get sick for 2 or 3 days. But then they would never catch that disease. As a matter of fact, this was common knowledge. So Onesimus wasn't even some doctor, actually. This was common knowledge throughout Africa. And Africans had inoculated, West Africans specifically, had inoculated smallpox at least 8 centuries before this notion of inoculation even became possible in Western medicine. And you could even go on to Dr. Felkin, who at a time when C-sections would pretty much end almost 100% with the death of the mother, he was seeing that Africans in Uganda, present-day Uganda, were performing C-sections, and they were seeing the woman walking around in 3 days, working in the field with the same baby she just delivered, strapped to her back, you know?
I was reading a document about Junkanoo. Yeah. I know you did research on Junkanoo. Throw out your book now. That's where you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, Black Rinse is the name of my book. On the cover of my book is one of the only real authenticated pictures of our hero, Junkanoo. And the book is called Black Rinse, A New Perspective on the History of the African Diaspora in the Bahamas. They are available at several AMMC sites, though some of them are now sold out and will soon be replenished. But I think they're still available at Balcony House and Fort Fincastle. And of course, they are available at Clifton Heritage Park, where I work at right now.
Yeah, I just want to say, you can throw that out, right? The book I was reading, it was a Bohemian excerpt from, I was doing research at the archives.
Yeah.
Where it listed Junkanoo and the fire that and worry too, as Obia rituals.
Certainly.
They said that when you beat that drum, the Negroes of the Bahamas gone into a trance, and they outlawed Junkanoo, mm-hmm. and said Junkanoo is a Obia ritual. Yeah. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
Oh yeah, certainly. Junkanoo was one of those things that was certainly defined as Obia. And in tandem with the Obia Act, you had things like the Vagrancy Act that wouldn't allow blacks to gather in too large of numbers. And to even speak about it, so when you look at modern African spirituality, talking about the religious side now, arguably the most influential culture coming from Africa is the Yoruba culture. And so when you look at African religion and spirituality throughout the diaspora, you see these groups called the Orishas, right? And specifically Shango. So though in my book I tell you that Junkanoo comes from the namesake, at least comes from Nana John Kwao, aka Junkanoo the First, the great Ahanta warrior from Princestown, who fought against the slave trade and won against that system for a number of years. There's also other Africans, of course, that came to the Bahamas prior to these first ships that came from Gold Coast, right? And many of us opine, and I've actually done a lot of empirical data research to kind of conclude it, most of us actually do come from the Niger Delta. And this is where the Yoruba people are from, the same people that influenced the biggest influences of African spirituality today. As a matter of fact, a song that we all know and love, I came down on a lightning bolt 9 months in my mama's belly when I was born, the Miv White, scream and shout, I had fire and brimstone.
That's not like Obia.
Coming out of my mouth. Well, that's Tony McKay, Exuma, the Obia man, singing his song. And we don't even actually listen to that. Mm-hmm. And that song is overt Shango worship.
What?
Overt. Yeah, and we don't even see it. So if you understand it, and this is where I believe that the drum pattern of Junkanoo actually comes from, because Shango is the god of drums. He's the god of justice. Elijah, you know, the chariot of fire, God sending him down for justice, and he using him as his kind of sword of justice, right? Shango also deals with masculinity, male virility, and all of these things. But Shango is the god of drums. And when you drum to Shango, you mimic both the heartbeat, so you have the doom-doom in Junkanoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you also mimic the galloping of the horse, because Shango also deals with the blood, you understand? So that's why you mimic the heartbeat, doom-doom, and then you mimic the galloping of the horse. So it's a rapid beat, and it's actually very different than the beats that you hear even in Princestown, done by what they call the Kundum drummers, right? So it's actually very complex history, and there were certainly spiritual aspects of Junkanoo. And as a matter of fact, the royal family of the Ahanta people, where the tribe where Junkanoo came from, these are actually family members of Junkanoo the First, blood relatives of Junkanoo the First. And they use cowbells in weddings, funerals, different ceremonies they use. And they say, oh, we use cowbells to conjure the right energy. Side note, conjure comes from the Chui word from Ghana, kanche, right? So you see how even these aspects have been inserted into the common vernacular of the English language to show you the level and the effort that was put into demonizing African culture. You understand what I'm saying? So, but now back to the Ahanti region, they say the reason we ring these cowbells so ferociously, in Chonkri because we were trying to get our ancestors to come and rescue us from slavery. And as they would tell you, when you talk here, talks about ancestors and African spirituality, people get uncomfortable. But your ancestors are who? Your grandmothers, your grandparents, your great-grandparents. Why would they want to hurt you, right?
Chris, Bahims are terrified of magic. We're terrified of Obia. We're terrified of black religion,
yes.
Right? We have an aspect of a population of our culture, of our people, who do this voodoo thing.
Yeah.
We don't like them because we don't like voodoo.
Right.
And now you saying Obia is like an overarching thing that
Certainly.
They ban all of that African spirituality yeah. and African practices as Obia.
Well, the Lord.
Junkanoo is Obia, you know? Yeah. We may have to ban Junkanoo.
The Lord lumps Obia and voodoo in together.
Is this the same thing?
That's again another complex question. Voodoo, to explain it to the layman, is actually, you would see it more in French territories. And that has to do with two things, the French language and the fact that the French actually extracted a lot more from an area that they named the Slave Coast, which is that same area of Benin and Togo where they have this African religion called Vodum, right? So, but what I have to say for people who have those sentiments, let's just put it this way, right? And let's look at history and put our biases on the side. We all agree that things like murder, enslavement and rape, you know, theft, all of these things are wrong. All of these things are sin.
Yes.
So you have one group of people, the ones they claim who did Obia and voodoo, all of those sins that I just called, because that is what happened. Furthermore, we are directly attached to these. Even when you look at the transatlantic slave trade, though every African was targeted, at the same time, those that did not adopt Christianity or Islam were targeted more so than other about Akans and people from Gold Coast, Ahantas, who brought Junkanoo here. So what does that mean? Many of those people are also, in fact, our ancestors.
So why do Bahamians tolerate Buddhists?
Exactly.
And they tolerate Hindi.
Well, because...
But they do not tolerate any kind of black religion at all. They say, now, black is Obia. And they have Obia, they worship in the devil, and they got to go.
Right, you know. Well, first of all, most of these religions don't even have this concept of the devil, and Satan himself doesn't even exist in these concepts. So to say they worship in the devil, it's just completely false, right? And it has to do, and of course, Asia has also suffered from colonialism, so I'm not trying to imply that. However, when you understand what racism actually was and the period of social Darwinism, there was certainly a totem pole, right? And you see this totem pole even manifesting today in places like Trinidad, Guyana, where Asians were actually brought in as a buffer between Africans, you understand what I'm saying? And they were themselves oppressed to varying degrees because they were brought in as indentured servants after chattel slavery ended, right? However, there was still this very high racial totem pole. And that totem pole has been firmly indoctrinated in us. People do not understand how serious this indoctrination of African culture, religion, and it's not, like I say, it's not even just religion. Women who suck their teeth for too long could be labeled a witch. You understand what I'm saying? Like, people need to understand that, and they need to put their biases aside. One group was murdering and enslaving the other group.
Christian people.
Right then. And Islamics too, even though many Islamic Africans were also taken, of course, in the transatlantic slave trade. So again, these are very complex things. So essentially, but what Obia is, in its true definition, is an amalgamation of the diverse African cultures that came to any colonial space, British colonial space specifically, an amalgamation of all these African religions, customs. So that had to do with Bush medicine. That had to do with the way you dance. That had to do with the language, your indigenous language that you spoke. It had to do with the way that you eat. It had to do with the way that you pray. It had to do with the way that you celebrate. It had to do with everything African about you. And yet we still do ASU to this day. Yeah, and I think people understand where I'm coming from. So to put it simply, you know, you have, I like to use this analogy, two horses and two pigs. You take two horses and put them in a pig pen, and they have children. Are they piglets or are they calves? They calves, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a caller here. Let me engage this caller and see what they have to say. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Godly day to the Sister Kinwais along with you and Chris Yuri.
Go ahead. How you doing?
I'm holding. We need justice, law, and order in this country, Super Hamad. Hey, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Tell me, you were to East Africa and West Africa, right?
Well, no, most just West Africa, actually, Ghana specifically, and surrounding areas all throughout that area. Yes, sir.
Okay, let me ask you something. For the way we know the world today,
mm-hmm.
we know what we does or need to do to be going forward continuously, right?
Right.
Do Africa has or seen those kind of opportunity, and are they embracing it as Africa in general, or whichever you was in Africa, West Africa? You understand the question?
No, you could reframe it for me quickly, please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, take for instance, us as a people.
Right.
We can say we have a focus. We know where we're going. We know where we wants to go.
What's the focus, Bremen?
Huh?
What's the focus? Explain what that is.
Well, the government have a different focus for me and you.
Yeah, but so what's the focus of the people collectively?
Collectively?
Yeah.
Take under the government.
Okay, then.
Okay, so what I'm asking Chris, right? In other words, we can see that. We can see the majority of people going to the government. In Africa, where you was, the part in which you was,
right.
Can you see situations whereby the people focus or moving towards a better situation, a more diplomatical situation, you know?
Well, I can say this. There's certainly, but when you look at the Bahamas, Anguilla, Antigua, and all of these small British colonies, and this was actually done on purpose, there's a massive kind of dependence on the government. And this is on purpose, and this was systematically done through colonization. So you kind of rely on the government. But when I just to kind of comment on what you were saying, I don't know if I hope I answered your question, but... Mm-hmm.
Well, so let me ask you something.
When I went to Ghana, though, however, politics seems to be a lot less polarizing in larger African spaces. So I can say that. So whereas in the Bahamas, and it has a lot to do with our size, as I was saying, because it's not just something unique to the Bahamas. We are heavily focused on politics for good reasons and for bad reasons, you know. But I noticed that in Ghana, and I was actually there during the local elections in December just now, or right before, I should say, during the so-called campaign period. It's almost like it's not as polarizing among the people, and people don't have these strong loyalties to the parties unless they are like a family members directly involved or something like that, right? And so they don't seem to be as dependent per se on the government. But at the same time, there's also a lot of oppression that is linked to neocolonialism, linked to even weak leaders in some incidences, you know.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to hang up. The area in which you speak, right?
Right.
Is there more left wing or right wing?
Certainly. Depends on the issue you're talking about. When you talk, but overall, I would say they are certainly more liberal and left-wing, particularly speaking to Ghana. So that's very different than another country in Africa now. So remember, Africa of like 53, 54 countries, and all of them are very much different. And within those countries, so Ghana, for example, has about 95 languages, you understand? So even though they are one nation, it's very difficult for us to even understand because we don't really identify.
So they does not have a common dialect?
They do. They have Ghanaian Chui and English, which are the two common dialects. English because of colonization, Chui because of the Akan people being the largest group. But I would say this, though. I view it as an African diaspora. You know, I'm a Pan-Africanist. So These country lines and boundaries, particularly even in Africa, because they came out of what they call the Scramble for Africa. From a Pan-African political perspective, they are virtually meaningless. They only mean something to me when Olympics happening and all of these things. And like Bahamians, I would say that Ghanaians, first of all, kind of led the front lines. You know, they were the first independent black nation in the 20th century, and they do have this policy of being very welcoming to other Africans as well. And they have always been kind of seen as this place that spearheads this kind of charge and the seek for African autonomy. That is why the Black Star is in their flag. You know, that's the whole concept that it is about. And in my opinion, that is one of the things, besides my research, that drew me to Ghana and why I love it so much.
You know, I like to put my biases on the table. And Bremen, you caused me have to sit up to the mic, because what I felt, what I felt, what I inferred, not what you implied, but what I inferred from what you said, suggests that you believe that Africa is less developed than the Bahamas. And Africa is less stable than the Bahamas, right? And I think we start off in a myth. We start off with misinformation, right? Not disinformation, but misinformation. That this belief that somehow we in the Bahamas and Africans in the diasporic West and the diasporic North, that includes the global North, are somehow far more advanced than Africans on the continent and in Ghana. And I think even with the images of extreme poverty that are currently thrown at us and the images of extreme disparity between wealth and poverty that are currently thrown at us, even that is programming, right? And I ask and urge Bahamians to consider whether we are truly far more advanced than our African continental brothers and sisters.
So, well, in Ghana, you could find a 95-year-old woman who, and they pay each other with something called Momo, which is mobile money.
Yeah.
Everybody paying each other via SMS text and all of these things. So they are, far, like when it comes to going digital, they are leaps and bounds ahead of the Bahamas, generally speaking.
We have some more callers here, but I want to ask or talk about SAGE and IFA. Mm-hmm. In the Bahamas, we have IFA.
Yeah.
Scores, maybe hundreds of Bahamians who follow IFA.
Yes.
Right? Like I said, doctors and lawyers who follow IFA. They wear in white. I watched the movie, Black Panther? And Black Panther had all these Africans wearing white. And yes. I'm watching and seeing Bahamians wearing this white outfit. Mm-hmm. And they claim they are IFA.
Yeah.
And I want to understand, what is this IFA? And what is this new spirituality that Bahamians have now adopted? And what do you sage for? But let me go to the caller shop.
For Baden.
No, this is lighting sage. This is lighting.
For cleaning.
No, it's for lighting sage.
Yeah, but you clean. You never clean with smoke. That's what happened.
It's clean with smoke. Anyway, let's go to the caller first.
You don't know science.
It's a science, eh?
Yeah.
Call it Obia.
I'd let him speak, but I won't talk about how Obia is a natural science.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yeah.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hey, morning. Morning, Aaron. Good morning, Chris. Morning. Very interesting conversation this morning. Mm-hmm. Just one very quick question here. Based on your survey or your observations in Africa, comparing it to the Bahamas, would you and the influences, the external influences on the people in parts of Africa that you have visited, would you say that the people, the natural cultural influences that the people had from our ancestors are more at play, or do you find that the external cultures that and ways that they do things outside of the natural ways that Africans actually were brought up and brought up through? Would you say that their natural influences are more at play, or would you say that the external factors are more at play in Africa? In other words, what I'm alluding to is the culture of the people. Are the people more resilient in terms of self-determination, or is it an external influence that is governing them or guiding them to the external factors from other countries that's playing a major role in the diaspora? That's all I wanted to ask. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, that's a great question. Relative to the Bahamas, they are certainly more inclined to their indigenous and natural cultures. So as a matter of fact, I think Ghanaians consume 5% imported and 95% of what they consume is grown and manufactured there, and they complain about that 5%. Outside of someone with a serious mental illness or outside of somebody with a disability, you won't find a man begging on the street or a woman begging on the street. They can sell you something. And in Ghana, they have retained much of their African culture, and they are extremely proud of it. The outside influence has a lot to do more with political and, in tandem with that, economic exploitation. And so that is what the outside influence is, as it has always been. And this is actually a big crux of my Pan-Africanism, where the natural resources of Africa, because we like to buy into these myths of Bahamian natural resources that, sorry to break anybody's heart, simply not true. But when we're talking about real natural resources, things like manganese, things like rubber, this is all throughout the Ahanta land, right? And the Ahanta land is where our people come from. That's where Junkanoo come from, right? They, just to give an example of them, have retained their culture so much, right? So just to give an example, I know Sister Erin could love this one. They have a plant called Ninya, mm-hmm. right? And this plant, Ninya, is something that we know and we use as our most powerful medicinal herb. And
when is it Bejerino or Sarasi?
Sarasi.
Yeah.
So when I go in there bragging about, oh, well, you know, we used to drink Sarasi all the time and this and that, they look at me like their nose is in the sky. It's like, hold on, what's happening here, man? Man, these people, as you saw this, put it in their shoe to work on their circulation. They actually make purification baths using sorcery, and they bathe themselves in it to keep people with bad mind against them right. away.
Hang it over the door to keep the devil out of the house, all this science, right, and culture, because sarasi is from the bitter melon family, mm-hmm. and Asian cultures all over the world know bitter melon, know chlorella as a cancer-fighting agent, an immune system builder, mm-hmm. right? There's science in it, but a culture story. So, and the way that the culture blends, right? I got a friend named Maria Govan. She Greek. Technically, she may not be a paper Bahamian, you know, but she is all Bahamian. And me and Maria gone representing the Bahamas, and we gone into the Maroon village yeah. on the Paramaribo, off the Paramaribo River in Suriname, yeah, Gunzi village, right? And we say, they say, look, you ain't taking the malaria medicine. Cool, we got some bush medicine for you. And when they give Maria that pot, my good Greek Bahamian friend, and she put that pot to her head and she horsebacked that. Yeah. They was shocked because they didn't believe that this European descent woman swallowed. And we had to tell them this ain't even as bitter as sarasin.
You know that.
Let's go to the caller again.
And they have their own refining. It's actually make it taste a little good. I asked them how they do that because I was drinking their sarasin. By itself, it was just as bitter, but they was doing it in these different drinks that was actually like a regular tea almost.
Yeah.
Science. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
A pleasure. Good morning once again, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning.
I listen to y'all talk about Africa. A lot of people talk about Africa, but I'm unfortunate, like some of y'all who actually visited Africa, the land. But a lot of people, they talk about Africa. I wonder if they know what they talk about. I'm a person, I watch a lot of BBC news. Mm-hmm. Now, BBC is not doggone prejudice. They deal with news all around the world. And they show me some things in Africa when you got some cities in Africa look almost like New York when it comes to tall buildings and offices and so forth, mm-hmm. skyscrapers and stuff. But the further away you go from the city out into the countryside and so forth, they got some tribes of people still living like thousand and cheetahs still over there. They still down on the grass with spear and shield and barefoot and stupid down around them. Mm-hmm. So then they say a lot of us came from Ghana. That was the shipping port where they shipped people to the west from. Like that was a shipping place where they stored the slaves and so forth or the tribes that they caught. But people came from all over the different countries in Africa and they brought them to Ghana to ship to the west. So we always say, we from Ghana, a lot of us say, we from Ghana, but we from many different parts of Africa. And when we talk about Africa, to me, it's very difficult to compare the Bahamas to Africa per capita with people, because Africa has been invaded by so much different countries like China, America, Canada, Europe, England, over the many centuries. And most of their leaders became corrupt because them and the family made the best of everything, riding around in Rolls Royces and palaces and rich as a bat, while their own black people out in the country starved.
And Ifa.
Yeah, anyway. So,
who are these Ifa people in the Bahamas? And what are they doing with the sage?
Right, so...
By just saying, the Bahamas has also been subject to cultural invasions over the last...
Physical, too.
I don't even talk about African today.
From 1492.
I'm just saying.
And that was before places like Angola, it was invaded. So I'm just saying, Bahamas was actually invaded before
a lot of African places. What that have to do with my evil question? I want nobody...
I just got to say, and let's not forget that the indigenous population of Ghana exists. The indigenous population of the Bahamas is extinct. Mm-hmm. And so that in itself should be something that we never forget when we're talking about that. And see, we have to get out of the attitude that the Bahamas is not a part of the globe of colonization. There's no such thing as good or humane colonization, humane slavery. You understand? And this is a part of that. So,
And to make the distinction that Ifa culture is not an invasion into Bahamian. I think that's important. It's not an invasion into Bahamian culture.
It is a retention.
It is a retention and remnant.
Right.
Okay. Let me go to my caller first because she had that chance. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, good morning to Ms. Green, Chris, and Sienuri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Chris, great conversation. You know, thanks for spreading light on the origins of inoculation that I've been saying for a while on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
They have it listed as China and India, but, you know, I honestly believe Africa. That it originated in Africa. We know that the Aboriginal people practice it, like I've been telling these people, and the West have kidnapped it and patented it and started adding all type of arguments to it. So we know that.
Right.
And so what happens now is, I want to clear up this thing about voodoo and obia. So they have branded all African traditions as paganism.
Exactly.
We see them drinking the blood and eating the body of Christ, right?
Mm-hmm. And sacrificing turkey and ham at Christmas.
Right.
Yeah, but hold on. What I'm saying is, listen to me. Now, the voodoo practice in Haiti is slightly different, but voodoo is basically a monotheistic religion, and most people don't know that.
Right.
So so what happens is with obia, obia basically is more like mixing the living with spiritualism. And so I have a question for Chris, and I'd like for him to comment on it, because years ago I learned about a fetish priest in Africa. So I realized the power that they had, and then I realized the reason for the fetish priest, connect the people between the spirit and the spirit and living.
Right.
And so what Europeans have done wrong is they have conceptualized what African religion was all about. So they dubbed us paganism even though they couldn't speak our languages.
Yeah.
But what Africans did was they paid homage a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They connected themselves innately to the earth.
Yep.
So they paid homage to the earth, the air, the sea, the plants. You see what I'm saying, Chris?
Right.
So this is misunderstood by Europeans.
Yeah, and they say you worship these things, these inanimate objects. You're not worshiping
them. So, Chris, I appreciate you so much. And so Sparky said something that made me realize Sparky was correct. We came from all over, but I love to lean on Chris' side because I deal with history. Mm-hmm. As Europeans discovered Africa, they basically came from the west and the northwest. So due to the topography of the land, they know they were unable to move into the inland without guidance from our tribal people. So we must realize common sense to discern the truth from lie.
Certainly.
You see what I'm saying? And so the fact that Sparky said is true, that most of the people were really brought to Ghana for real. I think the name of the castle is Elmina, right on, Chris?
Yeah.
So because my mom went there, I didn't went there, I didn't have to go there, but one thing I remember my mom telling me very profoundly, she said she cried, and she saw the scratches in the concrete, and she said, listen, you can still smell the human stench within the confines of that place, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why I always make the joke when I'm on a bus or I'm in an enclosed area and people have the windows closed. I'm saying we are used to suffocation, okay? And so I like how Chris is deconstructing and bringing out Africanism because we realize that we are being indoctrinated. And you could also comment on the Black Madonna and child. So the reason for the fetus priest was to instill fear and keep peace within the community. So the fetus priest would make it like a year of power. So if you do something, then you will wake up in the morning, you'll be dead. Someone would sneak a fly. Dare 3 weeks, a testy fly or whatever you dare 3 weeks later, sneak a snake or find some way to poison you or kill you and then make it look like your fetus piece of power.
Yeah,
so
right.
So this is why OBR has become dubbed because it's being dubbed as evil, because people use it for evil. Bless them.
Well, I wouldn't say they use it for evil. You know, it's all about context. So, because if a woman poison a slave master, that's not evil. You know, we have to get into this mindset of And this is what Obi was using the Bahamas for. Charlotte DeVoe, South Kitts Island, just to name one, right? Thanks to Tamika Galanis for exposing that, right? But essentially, if a woman employs in a slave master, that is not evil. That is a celebration of our freedom. So these are even the things we celebrate when we talk about majority rule. This is the march to it. Mm-hmm. This is the struggle for freedom. You know, just like if I kidnap you and your family right now, and you incapacitate me to free your family, you are a hero.
MLK say peace is not the absence of violence, it's the presence of justice.
Right. And also, I would like to comment and just say blatantly, because I know we're running out of time, Africans are not to blame for the transatlantic slave trade. You all need to put that in your pipe and smoke it.
You mean us? Africans, we sell each other?
I mean, we say it ain't you, but it ain't Africans as a collective.
Why are Africans the only people blamed for their own genocide? And at the same time, we'll admit that Africans have suffered the most from genocide. So when we come back, when I come back on it for another show, we can definitely dive.
So we still have 15 minutes to go to commercial.
Okay.
I just want to say happy birthday to Sean Ford from his wife, Royanne, and his three children. Happy birthday again, Sean. That's Sean Ford. And this is Guardian Radio AM. We'll be right back for the last 15 minutes. We're hoping that Christopher can start talking about these evil people.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Why you say it like that?
That's
how I talk. Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Are you ready to catapult your business into the spotlight? Introducing Guardian Business Boots.
Ignite your success, and it's absolutely free to join.
Did you say free?
Yes. Free Guardian Business Boost is not just a program. It's your ticket to unprecedented visibility and growth. The Guardian Media Group is committed to helping the Bahamas prosper by creating new opportunities for small businesses who are the key drivers of that growth.
How does it work?
It works by first registering your business with the Guardian Business Boost at thenassauguardian.com. Then, each month, Guardian Media will pick and boost 5 businesses with 1 month of free ads across our multiple advertising platforms. The Nassau Guardian newspaper, website, Guardian Radio 96.9, Star 106 Hits, and all social media platforms. Catapult your business into the spotlight with Guardian Business Boost. Sign up for free today at thenassauguardian.com.
Nassau Cruiseport presents Phil Stubbs Live at the all-new Nassau Cruiseport Amphitheater,
January 13th.
Gates open at 7 p.m., showtime 9 p.m.
Book your tickets now at bahamasetickets.com.
General admission $50, $75 VIP.
Prepare to be blown away as we kick things off with one of the Bahamas' beloved artists.
You're raking and scraping with Ira Store, Nishi LS, and Phil Stubbs Live.
Sponsored by Kalik and Ron Ricardo. Nassau Cruiseport, the place to be.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
See the poor with the word of God. Yeah, them know how only God we have. Who read one Psalms a day, teach a politician, them how else pray to God. God everywhere we chat.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, I'm talking to Christopher Davis from Clifton Heritage and one of the historians there, researchers there. And we're talking African spirituality, whether it's good, bad, evil, and why we look at it as just being black as evil and sinister, right? And especially when we compare it and how we embrace all these other religions, but yet Obia is still against the law in the Bahamas. And a number of our practices that we do still today is our Obia rituals, right? That we do, the junk canoe, the fire dance, the tying the black string on our, the putting the paper bag on our forehead, all Obia rituals that we still do, but yet Obia is against law. But I want to talk about a Yoruba religion that has taken root in the Bahamas.
Yes.
Ifa.
Ifa.
What is Ifa?
Shout out, first of all, to Ago Ile. I'll leave that one right there. And Ifa is essentially a manifestation of Yoruba religion. So the Yoruba people are actually one of the largest ethnicities on earth, not just in Africa, on earth. You understand? Nigeria has 200 million people, and I believe that Yoruba are the biggest ethnic group in Nigeria, and they have more people in Russia. So that tells you alone, one of the biggest single ethnicities on earth, right? Now, they are the ones who religion, I said, had much influence. So we could go back to this primordial being, whose name is Shango, right? Now, Ifa and even what we know as Christianity shares a lot of similarities. So this manifests in different ways in the African religions of Cuba and Puerto Rico. There's also this idea of the Holy Trinity, right, as well. And what you had in those days was something called syncretism. So there is a belief in Ifa, actually. It's not what you call a dead letter religion. So that's what it's saying. That's all it could say. Everyone had to follow the same thing. It's a belief that, you know, we are all different. Therefore, our paths are all different to reach in the Almighty, right? And so in this religion, Ifa, what comes from Yoruba, this was one that was certainly practiced throughout the Bahamas. So when I mentioned that primordial being Shango, who I believe is the influence of the drum pattern, who deals with blood, there you have the heartbeat, and then the rapid tum-tum drum, which is the galloping horse, right? That is actually distinct with Shango worship. And you could see that in Colombia especially, where the Shango drumming in Colombia sounds eerily similar to Junkanoo, and in Brazil, and in Trinidad, all right?
So how did Ifa take root in the Bahamas? I know there's a proliferation of African religions here, right, in the Bahamas. Hebrew Israelites, Rastafarianism, right?
Certainly.
And now you see this Ifa religion is here. Here. How did that happen?
So that always happened. Ifa was here before Rastafari. Ifa was here before any of these more modern manifestations of African religion. And they are, of course, African religions in their own right. Powerful religions should be viewed as honorable and respectable as any other religion, particularly Christian denominations in the Bahamas. Let's make that clear. But Ifa was something that came here with our ancestors. You understand? Particularly during that, what they call the post-transatlantic slave trade period, with the so-called liberated Africans in the Bahamas. We could call them displaced Africans. So the reason, and I could hit two points with this one point. So talking about the presence of Yoruba in the Bahamas, and also the reason why we shouldn't call them liberated Africans. So on May 10th of 1838, about 1,200 people landed here on two ships that came from Lagos, which at the time was like pretty much the proverbial capital of Yoruba land, where the Yoruba people land. And this was almost all Yoruba people. About 6 weeks later, 6 to 8 weeks later, that is when emancipation came. That was the end of chattel slavery. So here you are now, a so-called liberated African in a British colony, which by itself is an oxymoron, right? A liberated African in a British colony. You watch most of the black people, chattel slavery end, 1838. Their apprenticeship period, we should say, in 1838. Everybody is now free, but you got to serve another 12 years working for the same loyalists, the same European people, right, as an apprentice / indentured. So that is why they are displaced. But it also shows you at a time when our population was still, I believe, under 30,000 people. Here you have about 1,200 people landing on one day, all of them being Yorubas. You understand? And this doesn't even include ships like the Rosa that brought people like the Aeneas's ancestor, who then became named Britain Aeneas, who arrived there as a child, you know. And then you have other ships that come from all over Africa. Ghana has the most forts. There is also this belief, people don't understand how large Africa is. So the people that went to a fort, they generally came from that region, maybe a little bit inland. There are about just under 50 forts, I believe, or under 60, sorry, all along the west coast of Africa that were involved in the slave trade. Ghana has the most. And the Ahanta region, where we come from, have the most, at least where the first three ships came from, have the most in Ghana. You understand? And so there's always a lot of confusion. And then, of course, this leads to all of the victim blaming that you see in the Maafa.
According to our history book, Bahamian history books, we had a number of Yoruba societies.
Right, exactly.
What happened to them?
Those are the same societies that we still do today. So the Yoruba Society, the Congo Society, I don't want to call the names of some of these.
Congo Town, which is now Step Street. Step Street is a marker of Old Congo Town.
Yeah, Congo Town, right. The sign actually there, if you come from the Johnson Road side,
yeah.
It was broken down for a while, and I saw it back up at one point, and it was broken down again. But that's a sign that needed to be a statue, something. See, and this is where...
Yeah, more than a sign.
Oh, yeah, more than, thank you very much. Some monument. And that was actually... Fox Hill was always populated by a diverse group of Africans. Then you have Nango Town. So Nango Town were also Yorubas. You understand? And of course, Bain and Grahamstown is the most well-known one. And so many of these friendly societies, burial societies, if you will, hard name, like the Congo, this and that society, the Yoruba, this and that society. And like, let's call it the Prince Hall Black Freemasons, which was originally called the African Lodge by Prince Hall himself. And he did that on purpose and said as much, because the man was a man of Pan-Africanist sentiment, but that's another thing for another show. Like that, because of this demonization of Africa, naturally the time that elapsed that would cause you to forget home. Over, and then, of course, we don't want to be associated with Africa. We Bahamian, we an African, right? This is where this thing kind of began to trickle away, when we stop identifying with the African groups and the place in Africa that we actually came from.
And then the African communities that took root here. In our conversation with Dr. Arana before the holiday, right, one of the things that was raised is that the removal or the fight for equal suffrage, where it's truly one man, one vote. The point was raised that at one point there were constituencies that had multiple representatives to vote for. Right? Some constituencies only had one representative to vote for, and some other constituencies had three to vote for, right? Now, in this historical reflection, now I want to know, were the constituencies that only had one representative, were they predominantly African? And was this an attempt to give the European descent more power in the face of...
Oh, yeah, certainly. Right? This is definitely attached to this march up to what we know as majority rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Believe the correct term is gerrymandering and filibustering.
Right.
And so they would take a population of 1,000 white people and divide it up into more constituencies that may have 10,000 Africans over here, and they'll make that into three constituencies, you know? And then, of course, you had the laws that were passed by the supervillain of majority rule, if you will, Sir Stafford Sands, where it was more than one, it went by the amount of land that you own. And with the wealth disparity along racial lines that existed, of course, that gave the advantage to the white politician almost every time.
We got to invite you back. We got to invite you back, because I still want to delve into IFA again. Yep. But this has been Guardian Radio the AM. Of course, we're talking to Christopher Davis, the historian at the
Clifton Heritage.
And you can always go there. He give you a talk and give you details. He talk about his book and all of that. But anyway, we got to go now at 12 o'clock, and we have the news to go to.
Yes.
Anyway, you
stay
take care.
Stay tuned for Howard and the Revolution.
Yes.
No, the Foundation. The
Foundation.
Upon which all things stand.
Yes.
Good morning, Howard.
Take care, Aaron. Have a wonderful day.
Lift up the people with the word of God. Fight violence with the word of God.